Okay, Michael, one more time. Welcome to the show, and thanks for being here. It's a really pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and as we just discussed off mic, so you are Michael, but you're also Misha. Yeah. Do you feel different when people call you Michael and people call you Misha?
Not different, but it's actually what I wanted to ask you as well, because as a person that speaks more than two languages,
right,
how do you feel when you have to switch? Do you feel like you're an entirely different person, or do you feel the same?
I do feel very differently speaking Russian and speaking English. It's almost like you have two different personalities. I still don't have my German personality. Yeah, I think
me neither.
That's what, I mean, I'm trying, but it's also interesting for me to see through learning language how you can change your personality, because language always shapes you, and in this sense, it really develops certain aspects of you that are in the language, but then they open you up, so to speak. So this is how I think about it, because I also call myself Dimitri in English, which is, I feel, just correct way to say my name, rather than trying to, you know, say Dimitri and then correcting people that they, you know, saying it wrong, just because the name itself is Greek, so it can transliterate into other languages. Don't want to like stick to just the Russian version, so to speak. But let's start with, I always wanted to ask you, because you're a very artistic person, and that's how we kind of connected in a way, in a gym, but yeah. Also you are an artist, so you draw and you make graffiti. So I just wanted to ask you, do you look at the process of at sport as an artistic self-expression?
Definitely. I mean, even if we look at, let's say, ancient Greeks and philosophers, yeah, they also had this idea that you can self-express through your body and through strength, you could say. And I think that this is what I've been doing personally for the last few years as well. And it's all like subconscious, but
right.
Yeah, I just like to express myself in every way possible. And mostly I would say it's the visual part, like if I have to create something, you know, I don't know, make some art, paint, or sculpt my body. It's
right.
It's sort of the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you work on it every day, you see the result. Like, you don't see the result every day, but eventually you will see why you do what you do.
Right.
So, yeah.
And I mean, you definitely see the results, especially in your case, because you told me that you've been doing it for 11 years, which is very impressive.
Thanks.
I mean, there's such a consistency. It's like, it's hard, I mean, for a lot of people to understand what it takes, like 11 years. And I think the process, I mean, for me, sport is the process of self-exploration of my physical body, and I would say my physical limits. But, you know, I haven't been doing it for 11 years. So it's also interesting for me. It's very inspiring, to be honest, to like look at a person who does it for that long. And just, of course, to see the results, because I mean, I can see your results.
Appreciate it. They're
very impressive. And I always wanted to ask you how you, I mean, you're doing professionally powerlifting. So which is basically to lift as much weight as possible. And what we discussed it briefly once about like this, as you describe this idea of like bringing all this energy into this one set, basically,
yeah,
one rep max. And you said something about how you need to, it's more about your nervous system than about your body, which I find interesting. And it's also like this connection between your mind and your body. So just interesting for me to, if you can maybe just talk about it.
For sure. Personally, I believe that in order to perform like and do your best in powerlifting, you need to have like a very strong nervous system, and it's not just about the amount of muscle you build or the amount of muscle you have. You have to be able to activate every single striation just for that moment, you know. And not a lot of people can do it. I don't know whether it's genetic or maybe it's something that you can learn, because you see a lot of people that don't really have that much muscle, and they are able to lift like insane amount of kilograms.
I always find when you lift, because in person you always have like this almost like a calm nature, and when I see you, but when I see you lifting heavy, something else, I can actually feel something else comes out. It's like the part of Michael.
It's like the inner demon.
Right. Like what goes through your head when you like really should like go there and lift like above like 200 kgs, so to speak?
Actually, it's nothing, you know. It's like this meme whenever there is like this monkey in your head that smashes the drums and stuff. And it's just that I'm so into the process, and I'm trying to enjoy the moment when I lift. And
but do you sometimes like have like certain, like you jack up yourself, like have a certain imagery? I don't know. Music, because you listen to music.
Yeah, right? Definitely. Like it's music. It's sometimes, most of the time, pre-workouts. And, the thing is that there are some cases whenever I have to like motivate myself, and basically because, let's say, the amount of volume that I have during training is sometimes it's difficult to actually get it done. So sometimes I do have anxiety, like let's say before the last set, when you don't really know whether you will be able to do it. So you really have to concentrate, and but you still can get it done.
Just for me, it's interesting because I don't do it that much. And I think I lack this like skill set to be able to just go there and have like all this kind of just, I don't know, energy and just like this, almost like the word with this bar. Sometimes when I do like intense, I did like, for example, 400 pull-ups in 90 minutes. So there was the war, but it was the different type of war, because it was continuous going there to the bar and getting like those five pull-ups in like 90 seconds, whatever, and then just doing it again, do it again. So it's like it's a lot of also like literal pain, especially in your hands. But it's very different from just going there and just doing one rep max, I feel. It's like,
but to be honest, like I don't really go for one rep max that often. Mostly it's like three reps, four reps, five reps, something like that. And like the real one rep max is usually, it has to be done at the competition. I don't think that it makes sense to do it at the gym. Some people do it for their ego, and I used to do it as well for my ego before I started powerlifting, actually. Like I would just show up at the gym and try to do like a one rep max every other day, you know. And it's like a miracle that I didn't get injured. maybe, I don't know, it's the strong connective tissues or something else. But I think if someone else would have done it, it could end up in a bad way.
Right. Yeah. It's actually interesting that you're saying, because from time to time I do it, but maybe there's no real reason if you don't compete anyway, so to speak. Yeah, but what's really like caught my attention is just this idea of like bringing your nervous system into this process, and it's just for this 1 second. Yeah. How did you feel during your competition, so to speak?
It was actually because like I'm an aspiring powerlifter. Mm-hmm. It was my first time competing like in powerlifting, so it was pretty interesting, but also very exhausting in terms of like wasting energy on organizational stuff.
Right.
Like, for example, you have to always see the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And also it was all in German, because it's in Germany. Yeah. So you have to track when exactly you have to come out and lift the weight. Then after your first attempt, you have to calculate, okay, how much of a jump I can do. Like, for example, from 200, can I jump to 210? Or can I jump to 220? And you have to think very fast, because you don't have much time. You just have like a few seconds to tell it to the judge. So they set up the next attempt with the right weight.
Right. Yeah. It's also interesting kind of interplay between your like your ego, your confidence, and also like people are there. So it's people are watching, so you don't want to screw up. And also because it's like this, it's like the weights are very heavy. So not to injure yourself, and you know, you still have to, you know, keep everything under. It's like, it's just like the process, of course. Again, it's like the artistic in a way, because you have to kind of connect so many things in your head and then make a decision and then perform. Yeah. So this is what I mean. I really appreciate, like, you know, like the archery of just of like self-expression in the sport, so to speak. Yeah. Do you often think about how, you know, sport connects to your, you know, inner artist, or like this creative nature?
I think it definitely, how can I say it? It definitely connects, because at some point I was like really into art. As a child, I went to art school, but then eventually I stopped because I was not into the stuff that I was told to do, you know.
Right.
I was more like into street styles and into graffiti. So I dropped out and I started doing graffiti.
Right.
And eventually, like after I stopped doing graffiti, I couldn't really last that long without doing anything, you know.
Right.
So I had to find a way to express myself again. I even tried to rap when I was like 13, 14 years old, but that was kind of funny, you know. I was just trying to like copy the American rappers, and afterwards I realized, okay, I can't do that because I get bullied all the time, and people find it funny. So I rather do something that is helping me to express myself, but also that is respected in the society, you know.
Right.
And because I grew up in Ukraine, sports was really respected. Like when you, if you're an athlete, it's like you are a superhuman or something.
Right.
So it was like an easy way to get the both things that I wanted, you know, like to express myself and to improve my status.
Yeah.
And so basically I got into basketball and I really fell in love with basketball and I kept playing until I was 17 or 18. Mm. But in the middle of the whole process, I started going to the gym, basically because I wanted to improve my athleticism and yeah. So as soon as I started going to the gym, I noticed right after like 1 month, some kind of progress, you know, like my first, I think after 2 weeks into the gym, I was already able to bench like 60 kilograms for reps.
Right.
And deadlift 100 plus kilograms. And it was very clear to me that it was something
bigger
for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just basically kept going without any, you know, stops or something like
this.
Impressive. You know, my kind of athletic career, if you can call it that way, was like a little bit like a zigzag shape, because, you know, I stopped, then I played tennis for at least 8 years, like four of those years professionally. But then I stopped because I didn't like the sport. I had to make a decision to go and study, you know, to make a living, so to speak. But then, because I feel my body just needs the sport, so it's not something I cannot live without it. It's very hard. It's hard to explain because I just feel it needs stimulation. And I guess in both in your and my case, you can actually see how your body looks like because it's really, it wants to be capable.
Yeah,
I feel. So I found wrestling, sambo, which is like a Russian judo mixed with a little bit of MMA. And there I felt, oh, this is really my thing because of the intensity. And just like it brings me this, like this feeling of that's the actual limit that you hit during the training.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I mean, I guess it's for you the same in terms of powerlifting, how much you want to, you know, to lift again, because this is like just chasing this pure limit of your physicality, so to speak. So that's just, you know, really, really interesting for me. And like, do you think like something drives you towards this direction? Do you something innate in you that just...
Well, I would say that I can't really say what exactly is my drive, so to speak, but I think that every one of us has like their own drive, and if we talk about like from an evolutional standpoint, I would say that everyone tries to increase their status in some way, and maybe that's like the reason why some people like to express themselves more and to actually achieve something. And maybe it could be that.
Right. I mean, I noticed for me, for example, because you're really capable of controlling your body, which, I mean, cannot be said actually that easily about your mind. And I always find for me this connection between just being capable of your own body just creates this, at least for me, the pathway to the control of my own mind, so to speak.
Yeah.
So this is definitely one kind of facet of like this exploration for me, and also just pure, just finding for me, at least for me, just the like the real boundary. It's like the real limit of your physicality. I still haven't found it, so I can't really. I mean, I'm just curious to know where it is. Again, with obviously with the, you know, being careful not to get injured, because sometimes I go all, so to speak, like something in me that just like drives towards the limit too hard, but then, you know, it's also like the art of just being able to kind of calm yourself down, so to speak. So yeah, and that's the interesting part, so to speak.
So when you started wrestling, did you have some kind of role model? Like, for example, when it comes to boxing, it's always someone like Mike Tyson, right, or Muhammad Ali. So who was your role model for wrestling?
And when I went into wrestling, I mean, MMA was getting popular. It was the time of Conor McGregor. And I mean, I watched all of them. And it's very, of course, interesting to kind of watch and observe them. But like, the reason why I love wrestling is just this pure madness of being there and just rolling with people and going like sweaty and stuff. And just there's some, I don't know, for me it's hard to explain, because I feel like I'm on drugs when I roll, because especially afterwards, it's just hard to, it's just, I feel like I give it all. And again, this is for me the limit, because I mean, I can, you know, I love kind of cardio stuff, but you can never reach your limit because there is no other person pushing you, so to speak. It's like the relationship that I form with like people I roll, and then kind of part of me kind of ignites, so to speak. But then, of course, I mean, I definitely got injured a couple of times. That's the dangerous part. And wrestling is probably one of the most like dangerous sport from this perspective. Obviously, it's just, you know, I remember people in my gym where I started, especially trainers, coaches, and they all had some type of problems. Back broken, like, you know, I don't know. It's like they all had some problems, even though they were like in mid-20s and they were already broken by going.
It's the same in powerlifting, by the way.
Yeah. I can imagine, because you have to put so much weight. Even for me, just the concept of putting like 200 on your back and squatting, just as if you put another person, you'll just crush another person. Just like the capability of yourself, just like, or like deadlifting or something like this, in bench pressing.
Yeah.
So to speak. Yeah.
But when we come to speak about like wrestling and stuff, I don't know. I saw like a video the other day about a very popular and legendary wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I believe his name was Alexander Karelin.
Karelin, yeah.
And when I see like his face expression when he wrestles,
yeah,
and it's basically his eyes that tell you everything, you know.
Right.
It feels like wrestling unlocks something primitive inside of you.
It does, yeah.
It's like an instinct to kill. I don't know.
And also for me, just being in this moment, because nothing else literally exists. And Karelin is, I mean, he's notorious for, I guess he lost only one match in his career, which is like, yeah. And I think there are also levels. I mean, basically like Greco-Roman wrestler, which, I mean, in the world of wrestling, that's where they can throw you, you know, how do you call it? Like almost like a backflip, but with another person.
Yeah.
And this is just another game. Or like Olympic wrestling, it would be something similar. It's like, because they use just raw power. Because, I mean, Sambo, Judo, it's mostly like lean toward technique. So you should be strong, obviously, but like a person with a good technique can, you know, just see you better and just can, you know, especially if you have a jacket, just, you know, use your own, I want to say, power and momentum against you, which is, it's like, because it's a self-defense. But pure, like those people, they are like people who do like a Greco-Roman or like Olympic style wrestling. Oh, those are like very dangerous. I mean, you can see, because they can take you and just, you know, have a surplex or something, like just like a backflip with you flying around. Just And of course, I mean, I know like one person, like one of my relatives, he told me he went to a competition and like the guy died like from this type of, because he landed on his neck and then just lights off. So it definitely kind of ignites something, yeah, as you said, primitive. And you never tried, you know, you did boxing,
but not wrestling.
Yeah. But not wrestling, right? Do you want to like try just for the sake of it? Because I mean, I'm curious how, like, a person with a very good, powerlifting background, can go into just for the sake of kind of fun experience.
Definitely, I would try it, but
right.
I would say not at this point.
I understand. Yeah.
Because now I'm trying to gain the momentum to actually like achieve something significant in terms of powerlifting.
Yeah.
And maybe after some of the goals are achieved, I can try and do some other things just for self-development or fun. Right.
Yeah. And,
but would you ever consider like going into a competition or I don't know, trying to transfer into MMA?
Yeah. I'm not sure about MMA again, just because like the risks are so high. But competition in I would say in Sambo or BJJ, maybe judo. I think I will definitely want to go into this direction. Just being a little bit more maybe cautious. But also, I mean, I also want to do Ironman in my life. That's definitely on my list. Because I mean, there is a certain level of enjoyment when you just do long, just like those endurance type of events. Because for me, for example, I do run a lot, not now because of my injury, but for me, just running is like just pure experience of just joy being with yourself, like without distractions. I don't listen to music, so I just can go there and run for 6 hours. And just being in your head just for 6 hours and doing something continuous and just, you know, it just, you know, it's different. It's just a very, again, I feel for me, it's also like the form of just self-expression, which you can do with your body. And then, again, it also ignites something because we are all born runners. We are all born to do this stuff. It's in us, so to speak. Yeah. Because, you know. And humans are not the most the strongest animals, but they're the most endure animals, actually. Because like a human can run for basically until you just drop, if you want.
But do you? Because I was wondering, like, when it comes to Ironman, I'm not really into that stuff, so I don't have like the knowledge about it, and so I can't tell the difference between like Ironman and triathlon, and so I don't know like what disciplines it consists of. Yeah,
Ironman is basically marathon, 4 kilometers of swim, and 70 kilometers of bike, and it's approximately 12 hours. So 12 hours of continuous race, just like, and I mean, I've done like ultra marathons. Like my longest was 60 kilometers.
Yeah.
I just ran to Potsdam and back, which kind of a joke, but it's not. That's what I did. And you know, it was fun because it's also like this is like a mental game.
Yeah.
In terms of pushing yourself, because after marathon, I mean, your body is already broken in a way. It's like your feet are hurting, everything. Your legs are hurting, hamstrings, I don't know, whatever. And then you just still keep going. And then it's always like, it's again, it's just self-expression of your capacity to move through problems. And of course, it translates to your life, so to speak, because that's the same, you know, neural circuitry that you use in your life, so to speak. So I would say, yeah, that's. I mean, again, I'm not that good still at planning my, I would say, athletic pursuits. So, but I definitely want to move in the direction to be able to kind of, you know, dissect what I want in the moment and then just focus on specific goals.
Yeah.
Because I guess as you kind of know, yeah, it's like I'm also can be, you know, take so many different challenges but then you don't really, you know, you don't really pursue fully one of those challenges. So you really appreciate, you know, that you have kind of clear goal in mind, so to speak. Yeah.
So you definitely have been inspired by David Goggins.
Partially, yeah, partially.
Yeah, I can see that.
Partially, but again, he definitely kind of plays a role in my process of motivation. But I wouldn't say he's the only one, because I kind of live, at least right now, by this I would say motto, like just like I just try to follow my own I would say creative spirit, if, like, for the lack of the better word, just something that, you know, wants to do this or that, and I just try to spend less time distracting myself and more time listening to myself. So then I have a clear picture of what I want, so to speak.
Yeah.
So this is how it works for me. And at least now with, like, my injuries, it gave me some time to, like, really reflect and to see clearly and just... because you also... like, I can see by, you know, observing you that you are very good at this system approach to your nutrition, to your... even your, I would say, your pursuit of powerlifting. You work with coach, I know.
Yeah.
So do you think it's that different to work with someone?
It just took a long time until I could, like, focus on what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to find myself in all kind of sports. Like, I tried basketball, boxing, and I even thought about doing bodybuilding, but not yet, I think.
So, yeah.
So
you can always transition.
Yeah. And some friends of mine, they tried to make me play American football as well.
Right.
But I don't think I will. It's like an interesting sport, but I think you have to start early in order to...
Right.
Achieve something, to reach, like, a certain level. So to answer your question, it really changed everything once I started training with my coach.
Right.
Because it just the whole approach, you know, it's like, certainly lifting and just going to the gym, it was fun before.
Mm-hmm.
But now it turned, like, into a new kind of game, you know, because, for example, you wake up in the morning, you check your messages, and then you see the new plan from the coach, and then you're already excited about something. You're excited, okay, what kind of plan will I receive today? Mm-hmm. Will I be able to actually get it done? You know, so it's like the whole day you have this mindset that you're like a character in the game that tries to to achieve some mission or something.
And gamification of the process.
Yeah.
I always find whether it's possible to just work with yourself as a coach, but then, of course, I guess coach is way much better than, like, he's more like he or she's more knowledgeable than you are in what you're doing.
It's not even that. It's just that I believe, like, it doesn't matter what kind of level of an athlete you are, you know, like, how good you are or how good you think you are.
Right.
It's just that you are not objective towards yourself.
Yeah.
Because you need someone to see from the outside what you are doing, because...
Yeah.
Sometimes your emotions can interfere, and
I mean, in life in general, I feel it's always better to have someone with whom you can talk through the stuff you're going in your life, and of course in the athletic pursuits it's the same, especially if it's a professional. It's very interesting. Definitely, I would love to try as well. And of course, especially from the perspective of recovery, which, you know, I'm not good at. Because there's always, like, this tension between, like, pushing yourself and realizing that actually the growth happens when you, you know, just take the moment to, I would say, even just respect the capacity of your body.
Yeah. I think it's like the problem that both of us have, you know, because once I tried to do something like that, for example, my coach sends me the plan and I'm getting it done. But also I did something extra, you know, because I thought that it wasn't enough or something, or I just wanted to, I don't know, get a better pump and get my arms pumped and something like that. And then it would actually ruin the whole next week of training because of that, you know, and because I wasn't able to recover. And so then I realized that I just have to trust my coach, and I can't I can't like add something extra all the time just because I feel like it. And that's the whole difference, like between I think like the difference between an amateur and a professional is basically doing something that you want to do or you feel like doing versus doing something that you have to do.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. But then, of course, for example, for me, there's, I have so many different kind of goals, and I cannot like just, I still cannot really choose like the one direction. And also, I mean, I do sport mainly for as a recreational thing. It's not that I really want to become like an athlete. But sport is definitely part of my life, so to speak. So I also don't know how to, you know, combine all those things because they have different, like, again, calisthenics, you know, gym. So I'm trying to now to narrow it down to, okay, like weighted calisthenics is something that I'm really interested in. So let's just maybe focus on those type of goals, and not, you know, do bench press in the meantime, because it, from this perspective, it doesn't make much sense. But yeah, certainly. Do you also feel that sport is part of your identity?
It's difficult to say because I don't really, like, I can't imagine myself without that kind of sports, or I don't know, lifting weights, and or actually doing something, making my body work. So I don't even know how, like, how it feels like not to do it. And but I wouldn't say that my whole identity is just that, you know, like a like a gym bro or something.
No, I mean, maybe like an athlete, or I mean something like an artist of your, again, an artist of your own, I don't know, body or something like this.
It feels like whenever you go through life, you always try to like get some kind of label, you know, like just to be seen as someone, for example. Now I want to be an athlete, so I try to be just an athlete, but in reality it's not possible because we are always like the combination of many things and
like the life experiences, so to speak. Okay, coming to like life experiences, let's talk about your growing up in Ukraine. So for me, because for me it's just interesting because, you know, I have a my podcast, we discussed a lot about politics, as you know. So it's just interesting for me to hear from you about your experience of growing in Kharkiv, and maybe just like share how it was for you, because you I mean basically spent there like 20 years, right? So and just how was it for you?
Well, it was certainly like an interesting experience, you know, and I don't know, I would say that partly it was challenging, But I'm also grateful for that experience,
right?
Because it made me who I am today. And
why was it challenging?
Well, it was challenging. I would say mostly because of racism or just people not understanding who I am, you know, and not being able to find my place in that kind of society, and basically like being always outside of the social group, you know. But also the way the whole system functions, it's just it's very strange, you could say. But also you understand why certain things work the way they do, because of the past of the country and because of the Soviet Union.
Why do you think it was strange, or from what type of perspective?
Just because of the collective communistic mindset, you could say. it's like a hive, you know. On one hand, it's like a good thing, because everyone understands each other, and because they basically are programmed the same way. But it, on the other hand, it kills your individuality, and let's say you cannot express yourself as an individual. It doesn't matter if you're an African or if it's just that you cannot be different, you know.
Yeah, you have to.
And I mean, the situation now has changed a bit because of the Western influence and the whole new generation. But back when I was growing up, it was still not common to be different.
It certainly is the same for me in Russia. And I was also a little bit of an outsider, because I had like a homeschooling, and partially I started because of like tennis, and then I just kept on going to, like, I kept on being in homeschooling for like high school and stuff like this. So also I didn't fully integrate into the society. So for me, it's also very interesting, because I always look at it as I understand it really well, and I still grew up there, but I always looked at the whole concept of just being kind of like this idea of you have to be like, I like others, or just this concept of you shouldn't be, as you said, it shouldn't be that different, or you shouldn't express yourself, which again kills your inner child, or, you know, just like inner, like, artistic nature.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I also don't know how to, like, you know, reconcile it even here, because I feel part of me, I kind of value, as well, that you said, like, the openness of people. I feel like, I don't know whether you agree, but I think Slavic people are more emotional. It's like they're way much more tuned to understanding, like, just pure emotion, so to speak. They're not very rational, you know. They don't really calculate, like, you know, everything in their life, so to speak.
Yeah.
They kind of live a little bit with this, with the kind of heart, so it's like lead with the heart, so to speak. Versus in Germany, it's like it's completely opposite. What we discussed, like, personally, right? People more kind of this individualistic, and they kind of try to think through every interaction of this kind of like cost and benefit almost. You know, it's like,
yeah, it's like they see life as a project, you know, and like a business project. Even marriage is a business project
for them. Yeah. So I feel like they lose like this certain, you know, connection to just feelings and emotions, and just like, just, you know, humans are way much more even complicated, just messy. And I think the beautiful part about human being is just like that we are messy, so to speak. It's like we're not really perfect. And this is like, for me, it's always like, because I really enjoy self-expression, but I also value this, like, I don't know, just like emotional part of the human being. And I always feel like almost kind of, I don't know, it's like two parts of me, they're trying, you know, to fight for like for my own identity, just like just try to impact me in my behaviors. And I don't know, because I don't think there is a right way, so to speak. But something is just interesting that, you know, you said the same thing.
Yeah.
Almost like growing up in Ukraine, how, you know, the difference between... But it's also interesting how you said that people connect to each other because they're actually more the same. I actually never thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, if they listen to the same radio, watch the same television,
right,
eat the same food, you know, because there is not so much variety
right,
when you go to a supermarket, or sometimes there is nothing at all.
Mm.
So it actually connects people and makes them think that they are, how can I say, they are all together in this, you know.
Yeah.
And from a standpoint of like neurobiology, it's also like maybe it makes them produce more oxytocin, I don't know.
I never thought about it, but it's definitely an interesting idea to explore, even for me, that the whole like the thing that makes you kind of the same, also the same yeah. thing that makes you more emotionally tuned again to other people. Yeah. And then it actually makes sense why they like the people, they don't understand the difference, because they expect everyone to behave in certain cultural norms are the same, so to speak. I mean, it's very interesting. I never thought about it. It's just, you know, it's just interesting for me to think. Yeah.
But growing up, I noticed that it's like a common thing that there is this idea that is instilled in your mind by the teachers, right, grown-ups, that you have to be normal and right, you have to be acceptable, so to speak.
Right.
And I could never like understand what is normal, you know, and
right,
how can I be normal? Why am I not normal, you know? And,
right.
And I would even... I wasn't able to understand it, and the thing is that at some point it was frustrating for me, because I wanted to try and be normal, but there was no way that I could fit in, you know?
Yeah, because you already, you weren't like others because of, you know... So those are the reasons that... I mean, which is interesting, because they kind of... That made you reflect a lot on your own, so to speak, experience and your own subjectivity, and that made you kind of different already. So, and then that's how you started your kind of creative journey. So, I mean, you can continue doing it. I mean, for me, it was kind of in a similar vein, because I did not really integrate. So it's like when I went, for example, into Russian university, especially like a prestigious university,
yeah,
like everyone was the same. And then like the life hit me really hard, because then I had to, again, just either try to change myself to be like them,
yeah,
or just, you know, to rebel, so to speak. I mean, I chose to rebel. Which is, yeah, just very interesting how it's just, you know, the growing up in this environment like forces you to comply, so to speak.
Yeah, that's crazy.
What type of change did you notice when you moved to Germany? In relation to that,
it was very different. Basically, like a new kind of world for me,
mm-hmm,
and I had to adapt quickly.
Yeah,
and the thing is that when I moved to Germany, it was like I had the mindset of an average Ukrainian, you could say,
right,
that thought that okay, Europeans or Germans, they are superior, and because basically Ukrainians, they put Americans or Europeans on a pedestal because they think they are more civilized and all of that, and that's what I thought as well, and that's why I could never be equal to a person that I talk to and stuff like that, and I had to completely change my whole mindset, and yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's the same about, I mean, Russians, especially who migrate. Because when I came here, I had like this mindset, oh, you know, they have to be like American. So I really adopted this, I mean, you can say like a fake personality, just trying to be kind of like American or like them, you know, just in general. Yeah. It's like after like 2 years of living here, I just realized, no, it's not, it doesn't work, because it just causes like such a big friction in me. Because I was never able to accept that I'm just Russian and just Russian living here. Instead, I try to pretend that I'm sort of not Russian, but, you know, I am Russian because I always grew up there. So it's like I had to try to kind of force myself to be something else.
Yeah.
And then I came to realization that, I mean, it doesn't work. It, like, just
crazy. Yeah, I actually heard something like that before, and I think like every foreigner has that kind of struggle, because they are not being accepted, and it's really difficult to integrate into the German society, even if you speak the language. And actually, like, I've heard a story from a friend of mine who is 100% Nigerian, and he came to Germany like 6-7 years ago. And he had to create like a new personality in order to be accepted, you know. He told everyone that he was American. Because if he said that he was from Nigeria, he would be like rejected 99% of the time by everyone, you know. And he had to like play this whole character, so and I think it's really a struggle, you know.
It is, and especially now with Russian, there's also a lot of shame involved because of the war, and it's like people just don't want to go and say, I mean, it's just, I'm not trying to, you know, go and say that I'm Russian, but at least I for myself just accepted the fact that I am. So it's not something I can change anyway. And just I just stopped trying to pretend that I'm, you know, American, which, I mean, I never, you know, said anyone that I'm American, but I kind of behaved the way that I would if I were American, so to speak. But then I realized, no, it just doesn't really work. It doesn't really work well. And especially, I think, from people from Slavic countries, when they move here, like from Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus, they tend to, because there is no like a very strong community here. At least I know. I mean, I don't have too, like, many Russian friends, or I just don't have any actually. So I just know some people, so to speak. But it's not that they form like a very strong community. Like people from Israel would have a community. Even like Georgia or Armenians, they always have like those people from Turkey, for example.
Yeah,
they always kind of stick to each other. And at least from Slavic countries, I noticed they kind of try to be more on their own when they migrate. Yeah.
I actually noticed like a thing with Slavic people. Whenever they are whenever they are traveling, and they actually recognize another Slavic person, they try to act like they don't know the person, or like they. Like they're not Russian, you know. And that is like a weird thing, you know, like a I don't know, it's just that people try to act like they're someone else, or
they do. It's true. I mean, I have my own theories about that. I think it's because it's like, because in Russia the state really embodies the people. So you cannot have, you cannot be just Russian, but not really be kind of not even supportive of the state, but associated with Russian state.
Yeah.
There's no separate identity for just like being Russian, but not being connected somehow to Russian state. And I think it causes a lot of kind of confusion and friction when you move abroad. Yeah. Once you move from Russian state, so to speak, you don't really want to go and hang out with people who associate themselves with Russian state. Yeah. So it's I don't think there is a good. It's just how things are, so to speak. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not something you can change. So yeah. Yeah. So okay, then I guess we are done for today.
Okay.
Right. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and let's record another one. You know,
for sure.
We'll gladly look at your results and your process of your growth, and just the further inclinations of your artistic self.
Okay. Yeah, man. Looking forward.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for being here.